Today I want to talk about spirit detachment. Spirit detachment is the idea that there are things unseen that can impact or interfere with our lives, invisible forces. So that's what I'm going to be talking about today. Most cultures believe in unseen spirits, including our own culture. Most of us believe in some form of angels or spirit guides or archangels or some other forces that can intercede on our behalf when we pray or ask for help from our deity. Most of us also believe in negative entities, negative spirits, some other stuff that's outside of our control or influence, and of these things we are afraid. The boogeyman in the closet is perhaps the earliest known experience in most of our lives, being afraid of whatever it is that resides in the dark. Dark being lack of light, capital L or lowercase l, or in the unknown areas of our lives. No one really knows what happens after death of the body. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff written about it. You can read all kinds of inputs and stories of near-death experiences, and they're very interesting, very fascinating. Religions have claimed the authority to define post-life experiences, but these opinions vary widely depending on what religion or what part of the world you come from. Now, there are groups of people who believe or have been taught to believe, I don't know if they do believe, they've been taught to memorize that this is one life, there's only this life, and after this life, when your body dies, you go to a point of judgment. And at that judgment time, you are going to be evaluated, good or bad, as to whether you qualified for a good place called heaven or a bad place called hell. And that's a popular point of view, and it's very fear-ridden. Many other people on the planet, and in fact the majority of people, believe that there are multiple lives, so reincarnation is a more widely held belief than the belief in one life followed by judgment, followed by heaven or the punishment of hell. My own experiences with the unseen, fortunately for me, began very early in my life, in my family of origin. I come from a large family. I was number 5 out of 7. And my oldest sister, Daphne, was able to answer the telephone before it rang, and she could initiate a phone call before that person introduced himself or herself. And so conversations over the dinner table during the week or on Sunday, formal kind of dinner, the subject of extrasensory perception, psychic phenomena, the ability to contact and speak with spirit, to know that there was a God, and so on and so forth, were very common in my family. This is actually before ESP was even believed to be true. This was just about the time that Duke University and a guy named, I think, J.B. Rhine, R-H-I-N-E, began a serious study into this area, real or unreal, of extrasensory perception. And the materialists say, this is all nonsense, but the others of us, the spiritualists, if you will, think, yeah, there's a lot that goes on that is unseen. So talk of the unseen and books related to this sort of thing were on the shelves of my father's and mother's various areas in the home. Books abounded. Books of this topic abounded as well. So let's fast forward to July 1969. I was on leave from the Army. I was about to start Officers Candidate School and become an infantry officer in the military, in the Army, in Fort Benning, Georgia. But I happened to be home on Long Island with my wife and 2 children. And my mother called me up and invited me to come over because she and one of my older sisters, Mary, and my younger sister, Anne, were doing something that would interest me. They were doing a thing that they called automatic writing. And so for the next 5 nights, my then-wife Marie and I would go over after the children were sleeping and participate in these automatic writing sessions. And we were contacting, a spirit who claimed to be named Julian, for our convenience, who had been in a physical life with my sister Mary in France in about 1507, and now had the role of being a spirit guide for Mary. Couldn't interfere with Mary, only could help her with her intentions or when she requested. And so, over those 5 nights, as we did automatic writing, it became my role to ask the questions of Julian about life and death, heaven and hell, reincarnation, God, spirit, angels, spirit guides, like him, and on and on and on and on, purposes in lives and our children and our parents, and so on. And so, really what my mother and my sisters had done is they had started out using a Ouija board, which, depending on your point of view, can be a good thing or a bad thing. You do need to be protected. You do need to protect yourself with a prayer before you get yourself involved in anything unseen. So they had started out with a Ouija board, and instead of moving to A and B and yes or no or numbers that are on the board pre-printed, the planchette, the device they lightly touched with their fingers, was moving in what appeared to be script, like handwriting. So what they did is they got a costume jewelry box and stuck a pen through it, and then two people would lightly touch it with one or more fingers of one hand, and as they would ask questions, the handwriting would appear on a piece of paper below. The pen would move in the box, and they would be writing out answers. So I became the asker of questions, and it was fascinating. Those 5 nights and the subsequent events related to this turned into, for me, the most God-reassuring times in my life. Of the many things that Julian said, one of which had to do with my mother's purpose and my father's to a certain extent, and that was, regarding me, to open me up spiritually. She was to be, and was, even from my earliest days, as he was, my spiritual mentors, to my great good fortune. At that time, my younger brother George was in Vietnam with the 3rd Marine Division, in dangerous areas. And my mother was concerned about him and asked Julian during the course of these 5 nights about George. But Julian never answered a question related to my brother when my mother was sitting at the table with us. But when she got up to make a cup of tea or went to the bathroom or went to another room, Julian would answer those previously asked questions all the time, saying, "We are doing all we can to protect him." I can feel the emotion of that even as here, years later, and my brother returned safely from Vietnam. I can feel the emotion of that experience. George, in his writings to me, and after return from Vietnam, told me about some of these incidents that he had. He was injured and went to the hospital for a couple of days. During that time, the person who took his position as machine gunner got killed. And another time when he was unloading something on the beach, supplies and so on, he was on a duty crew. The Navy further out at sea were firing large caliber weapons, and one of their munitions misfired and landed right next to George and his fellow Marines and didn't explode. Had it explode, George and all of his friends and other Marines would have been killed by the explosion of that large munition. So he had other experiences similar to that where something seemed to influence certain things for his safety and protection. Fast forward to 1992 in San Diego, California, where I moved with my second wife. I was engaged in a course of spiritual training that included past life healings, past life regressions, and other things of that sort, and something called spirit detachment. After those weeks of training, I wanted to support one of my classmates who was displaying his particular spiritual talent publicly, and that was trance channeling. This is where he would take a position sitting in a chair and relaxing, and then invite a non-physical being to communicate through him. So now in a different voice, with a different manner, this communication began. And there were a group of people, I would say maybe 8 or 10 of us in a circle, sitting on chairs, just listening or asking a question. And one by one, we'd go around and ask questions. And my then wife asked about automatic writing, which I had taught her how to do. What should we do with automatic writing? What about that? And when the advice came, you must take it public, I went, said that to myself, and I said it aloud. I was a businessman, and I kind of considered automatic writing to be a closet activity back in, certainly in my military days, and back in Manhattan, where I had lived for 11 and a half, almost 12 years, when I was in business. I thought that was a kind of an inappropriate activity for a businessman. Certainly, like, whoa, what's this guy into? Anyway, San Diego is different than Manhattan, and it's different from a lot of places. And maybe that's true of California as a whole. The openness to spiritual pursuits is so great that it amazed me when I recognized this. When I decided to go public with automatic writing, and in one day wrote a booklet, designed a planchette, figured out how to manufacture it, and packaged it, and wanted to call bookstores to see if they were interested in buying it and selling it on their shelves, I discovered that there were 17 metaphysical bookstores in San Diego County. And in Manhattan, there were 2. Some 4 to 6 to 8 million people in Manhattan had access to 2 metaphysical bookstores. I thought that, that says something right off the bat. Anyway, I got a great response from these bookstores. Were very eager to have this, and I did private demonstrations or public demonstrations, one-on-one sessions, group sessions for free, for pay. And it got to the point where even psychics would call my wife and I for automatic writing readings, because they wanted to ask questions, and they didn't want to be the source of the information. They wanted to validate it through other people who had these talents. Very interesting. So I noticed that one of the great things about San Diego and California, there is nothing considered weird spiritually. The openness to pursue a relationship with the Creator is very widely accepted. So over those years, several years in Southern California, when I manufactured that automatic writing kit and with books of stories and instructions and displayed this and did this publicly, I recognized that the most meaningful experiences during that time for me personally was dealing with people who had lost children in accidents, children that were killed in automobile accidents. The deaths, as you can imagine, were devastating, and the parents had trouble coming to terms with the meaning of that, the loss, what kind of God, what kind of life, what kind of spirit would allow this kind of event to occur. Inevitably, during these automatic writing sessions, the child would communicate through the planchette. They would be the non-physical force, if you will, the being that was moving the planchette and writing out statements. It doesn't take much guess to figure out that parents were shocked when the handwriting and the languaging, unbeknownst to us, of course, we didn't know these children or these people we were talking to, that the handwriting and the languaging matched their children's. And we used to get, that's how she talked. She used to use that expression all the time. An expression I had never heard before, or a particular phraseology that I had never heard before. And even the form of handwriting, when sometimes, in this one particular case, started writing when a woman had asked about her daughter, and I said, this is a masculine writing. I can tell the difference. This is masculine. This is not feminine. So I'm not sure who we're talking with here, but because I had done prayers of protection before we ever started any of this and engaged all the participants in this prayer of protection, I knew that we were not dealing with anything that wasn't positive. And in this one time in the Escondido Philosophical Library, the woman said, no, my daughter was very masculine. Continue. And then that's how she talked. She used that phrase. And in these experiences, inevitably, the children, these non-physical children now, these beings, would speak about the gift that they had given to their parents through death, that it was agreed upon, and it was designed to put the parents onto a spiritual path. And I would hear, that's what happened. And in this case, in Escondido, the child went on with, Mom, you don't remember that we had this agreement that I was going to give you this gift of putting you on the spiritual path because we knew up to this point in our lives, we never even mentioned the word God. We never talked about God. It was all about material things. It was cars and swimming pool and clothing and makeup and hair and electronics and material possessions, but we never talked about God. And my gift that we had agreed upon was going to be this turning point, this transition point to change the trajectory of your life and put you on the spiritual path so you would come to understand your relationship with our God. And the woman said, that is exactly what happened. That is exactly what happened. And that is exactly true. We never talked about God or gave any thought to God at all until the death of my daughter. And when this transition started to occur, the daughter went on further, and this is also a pattern that happened every single time, is, Mom, you need to know I am safe, I am happy, I am healthy. My life is so wonderful now. You needn't have any worries about me. This is fantastic. And that reinsurance was such great value to the parents. Back to spirit detachment. Not all beings know they die when they die. And it's apparently because after death, especially when there's no transition to it, right? A person who's sick over time, I'm going to die, that sort of thing. When they leave the body, there's no surprise, there's no shock, there's no drama there. They now are out of the body. But in those cases where going along, boom, they're dead, apparently they have a consciousness that is very similar to the one they had when they were in physical body, and there's a lack of recognition that they're dead. So in a case where there's a shocking death, or one that is not, they don't have the awareness that it was going to occur, in these daughters' cases that I'm speaking of, they seem to know, and they had this awareness that this was an impending event. And so when they were out of the body, there was no shock, no surprise, and they knew what to do next, which is notice the loved ones and move into the light. And that, frankly, is some of the best travel advice. Look for loved ones and move into the light. And so this consciousness after death, if death was a shock or unexpected event, can be confusing for the person who's killed in that unexpected way or dies in an unexpected way. And so that confusion results in a person not being aware that instead of doing what seems to be the natural, normal process, looking around for the loved ones and moving into the light. Instead, it's like, what do I do? So not all spirits upon physical death do that. And because fear is marketed so dramatically in a lot of different religions, fear of punishment, fear of hell, God's going to do this, and that God is wrathful and angry and vengeful, people hesitate to go into the light because, I did something when I was 3 years old, and I'm sure I'm going to get punished for that. And so that level of fear causes them not to want to go in that direction. They don't see it as a good experience that's impending, but in fact, a really, really bad one that is about to occur. So they try to avoid that, quote, judgment day because of all the fear that's been attached to it in the religious marketing. Additionally, if a person were addicted to physicality through alcohol or drugs or other substances or sex or something else involving physicality, the hold physically on them seems to be great. And so that urge to stay connected to physicality seems to occur. If spirit attachment is a real concept, if it's real, what factors increase the vulnerability of people to becoming attached? This is how I think of it. I recognize, I'm looking now at my hand, that my skin is a barrier to infectious items, bacteria, dirt, on and on and on and on, right? It is part of my immune system. It's part of a couple of different systems, but it's part of my immune system. It is a barrier between my physicality and other physicality. I think the aura or a biofield or this energetic space around us, and there is an energetic space around us in my beliefs and the beliefs of so many others. And I think if you kind of go back to looking at Renaissance painting of Jesus, for instance, and this field, this biofield, this aura, this energy pattern that is outside of the physical limits of our body is a standard equation. It's a standard part of those pictures. And it's typified or characterized by a halo or a glow. That's the energy field that I'm speaking of. It's not just this thing over one's head, and perhaps in a case like Jesus, maybe it was, but it is, in addition to that, it's around the rest of our body as well. As a protective field, think of it as a spiritual immune system. This is the spiritual immune barrier, much like our skin, that protects us from other forces, because we don't see this field, most of us don't anyway, we don't see this field. It is protection against things that we also don't see. Not that we see viruses or bacteria or so on, they're too small for the naked eye, but they can be made visible by magnification processes, microscopes and so on. Anything that weakens this aspect of our spiritual immune system can be a problem. Just like if we break skin, if we get a cut or so on, that makes us open to bacteria that may be in the area and may enter. Breaks or tears or weakening of our auric field is also problematic. Alcohol, drugs, anesthesia, chemicals, shock, injury, disease, toxins, environmental toxins as well as other types, can weaken our spiritual defenses. If we mentally or emotionally ask or think that it would be a good idea to take on somebody else's pain or suffering, we open ourselves up to that. That's an inappropriate action. It sounds charitable, it sounds compassionate, but it is not. We need to allow other people to have their experiences and not try to take their experiences and the consequences and the responsibilities away from them. We interfere with their growth and their development. We can be compassionate. In fact, compassion is a very high vibration. But interfering with other people's lives by becoming sympathetic, that is, harmonizing with their pain and lower vibrations, just means two people are now in pain. and it interferes with their lives, just complicating things for them and ourselves. Being loving and caring are always appropriate, but taking on somebody else's pain is not. There are locations that can be considered more problematic than others, and when I express them, you'll go, well, that makes sense. Hospitals, because death occurs there. In any place that death occurs, it could be problematic, because now a spirit could be there, looking, and so on. Funeral homes, accident scenes, bars where alcohol is served, and other places where addictions and death occurs, and where physically addicted spirits that are still connected to the physical urges are areas where we will want to be aurically strong and protected. Aurically strong and protected. That is, we want our spiritual immune system to be as strong as it possibly can. Here are a couple of books, and there are a bunch of them out there, that I found to be interesting and helpful on this subject. Unquiet Dead by Edith Fiore, F-I-O-R-E, Ph.D. Edith Fiore. Remarkable Healings by, her first initial is S, complicated first name. Her last name is Modi, M-O-D-I. Remarkable Healing by S. Modi, medical doctor. She's a psychiatrist. Edith Fiore was a psychologist who was one of the early people that came across conditions where she would be dealing with a person and not succeeding in helping them, using hypnosis, and all of a sudden be talking to somebody else. Like, hello, hello, who are you? And that's when this concept became much more widely known. And there are other books out there on this subject and how to deal with it, how to help other people, and so on. When I do a spirit detachment for clients, I can pursue two different directions. I won't call them two different methods, but maybe I will. Both involve the spirit detachment process itself, and that's the important part. In one avenue, if you will, when I'm being paid money to work with a client and the client has interest in the specifics of those attachments, such as when they occurred, which life, what life, when in this life, why, how many, what types, and so on, I delve into those areas. That part is not at all necessary. It's the detachment, that the result of being having one's field cleaned of these attachments in whatever form, any negative connections or residue or whatever, removed from our field is the name of the game. I've done spirit detachments on people in front of me, people I've been talking to over the telephone, on behalf of people in foreign countries. I had, when I was in San Diego, clients asked me to do a spirit detachment on their son, who was in Israel, who was now exhibiting very, very odd behavior. And it turns out, if you can believe this, of course, that he became attached with Holocaust victims that found him to be vulnerable because of alcohol, I think, and emotional conditions. And so the clearing was for his benefit and theirs. And theirs. Some years ago, there was a terrorist attack in Madrid at the Atocha train station. I think it was a Monday morning, and the commuter trains were filled. And just as they arrived at the train station, terrorist bombs exploded and killed hundreds of people. I don't know the exact number, but you can imagine that was shocking and dramatic and unexpected. My wife and I, Mary Ann, went to Madrid and on a vacation, and we were going to the Mediterranean, but I needed to make that stop, and I went to the Atocha train station and did a spirit detachment. in case there were any spirits still hanging around trying to figure out what had happened. An interesting point, and I was taught this in my training back in the early 90s in San Diego, is that when you make a decision to do a spirit detachment, you can fully expect to feel spirits showing up, looking for help, being released in the light, into the light. So I noticed early on that back in San Diego when I did spirit detachments for just felt called upon to go to a local cemetery and stood in that cemetery, you know, the hour or so from the decision point to getting in the car and arriving, I could just feel the weight increasing on me. And that seems to be the deal, that they were, that those energies were showing up knowing that they were about to have help going into the light. So I think that's a great gift to be able to render. I'm originally from New York, about 100 miles from Manhattan, but I had lived in Manhattan, and I used to take all tourists and business clients to the World Trade Center. And that was also a sales territory I had in one of my steps in my career. I loved the World Trade Center and used to go to that restaurant frequently. And the windows on the world. We went to Ground Zero. We went to the World Trade Center and I did a spirit detachment there for the same reason I did it at Atosha. Several months ago, my wife and I went to Poland, and one of the stops that I needed to have included in our journey there was to go to Auschwitz, to the concentration camp. I can feel the emotion of this. Standing in front of the ovens, I did a spirit detachment for any spirits still confused about what occurred to them 50 or so years earlier. Today I'm going to do the spirit detachment in the remainder of this call. If you're going to go through the rest of the recording, I recommend that you have a large glass of water, go to the bathroom, get physically comfortable and warm, perhaps wrap a blanket around you, and sit in a comfortable chair. I think you're better off sitting in a comfortable chair rather than lying down so you don't fall asleep. You're going to want to pay attention, I think. There's no danger one way or another, but awareness is a cool thing. So here we go. Let us focus our attention upon a living, loving spirit flowing through us. Let us lift our consciousness to areas of peace and harmony so that we may know our wisdom and knowledge to fulfill our path and purpose. We invite our guides and teachers to be with us, and we accept their protection as we surrender to this process. Visualize yourself surrounded with white light. I like the image of standing on a stage with a bright light shining down on top of us, and we're in that circle of light. Imagine placing a mirror-like substance on the outside perimeter of that light so that anything of a negative nature that tries to touch it will be immediately transmuted and reflected back to its source with divine love. Think this. I stand in the light. I am always protected, and my aura is sealed from any negative force. I call upon Christ, Archangel Michael, the angels of protection and love, the spirit helpers, and my personal guides and angels to be with me now as I assist other people in being a clear channel of the light and love of God in the facilitation in their healing process. I wish to assure the lost souls that it is our intention to help you. At this time, I wish to communicate to any lost souls occupying these people's bodies or auric fields or who are in any way attached to these people's energy bodies. I wish to assure you that our interaction with you is one of love and compassion. It is not our intention to harm you in any way, nor to cause you stress. It is our sincere desire to assist you to become free from pain, fear, and confusion, and to have full understanding of your situation, so that you may join your loved ones and friends who are waiting for you. I wish to take time now to explain to earthbound spirits that you are spirits who have been cohabiting other people's bodies because your own body had died. I want to help you understand that because we are all spirits, we never die, but our physical bodies do. At the time of your death, you may have been fearful and confused, and finding yourself conscious, may not have realized that you had died. Rather than go directly into the spirit world where your loved ones were waiting for you, you joined with another's physical body, who is still occupying physicality. Without realizing it, you have been harming that person by draining energy and causing confusion, because sometimes people cannot tell his or her thoughts and emotions from yours. It is our desire to help all the spirits present move on into the spiritual, the higher spiritual frequencies, so that all of you can continue your evolution without interference. If there are any spirits who are reluctant to leave because they have a fear of hell, of being judged, or feel guilt or shame for past actions, we ask that you be assisted now to forgive yourselves. At this time, we ask that the Christ presence be made known to these spirits, and that be reassured that they are totally forgiven for anything they perceived as wrongdoing. We ask that spirit helpers, who are teachers and religious leaders from the various religions, come forward now and communicate to the spirits. We ask that they be helped to understand that there is nothing to fear, because there is no such thing as hell, that hell is a concept that exists only in the minds of humans, that you need not fear judgment, for God is loving and accepting of us. And now we ask that the friends and loved ones who have come to assist these spirits into the light send love and thoughts of forgiveness to them. And most importantly, we ask that the spirits open to receive God's love. And rather than be in pain any longer, forgive yourselves completely. You have suffered long enough. You have paid your dues. It is time for you to move into the light. Spirits, we ask you now to become aware of the Christ presence and the brilliant white light. We ask that you become fully aware of your friends and loved ones who have come to assist you into the light. We ask that you reach out your hands now and make contact with your loved ones and open your hearts to feel their love. Know that in a moment you are going to leave this person's body, and when you do, you will find yourself in your own spirit body. Your spirit body is a perfect body. It is youthful, strong, attractive, and will never age or be sick. Know that when you go into the light, you will be freed of the pain, fear, and confusion associated with the earth plane. And any spirits who have been deeply wounded will be taken to a wonderful place of healing where you can be fully restored. Dear ones, you are healed and forgiven. You are at one with your own higher self. You are filled and surrounded with the Christ light and the light of God. You are filled and surrounded with the Christ love and the love of God. You are now free from the earth vibration, free from pain, free from fear, free from confusion. Go now in peace and go in love. And so it is. We now call upon the In God We Trust angels to come and to assist any spirits to overcome their fears and to be re-educated and help to understand that it is harmful for them and the person when they attach to another's physical body. We ask these angels to assist these spirits into the light using whatever means and methods are necessary. We call upon Archangel Michael and Mighty Astraea for their angels of the Flaming Blue Sword to stand by with their great power and to cut free any spirits that need this special help. We thank all of you for your assistance in this healing. If there are any reluctant spirits remaining, I now call upon Archangel Michael to carry away these reluctant spirits, for this body is not their rightful place. You can put your hands on your heart, and you can repeat this 3 times. In the name of the light and in the name of Christ and God, I ask that these spirits leave now. In the name of the light and in the name of Christ and God, I ask that these spirits leave now. In the name of the light and in the name of Christ and God, I demand that these spirits leave now. And we call upon mighty Archangel Zadkiel for a band of angels of the violet flame. We ask that this cleansing, transmuting flame dissolves any negative energies of demons, thought forms, hexes, spells, curses, mind controls, and any residue in the body or aura. We call upon the angels of light and the silver ray to remove these negative energies. And in the name of Christ and God, we command that all negative entities are removed to their proper place. Repeat this aloud. I completely forgive all spirits who attach to me, and forgive those outside influences who attempted to manipulate me. I forgive myself for unknowingly allowing this violation. Imagine that a golden light is now entering your body through your crown chakra. You might imagine being back on that stage with a golden light now shining down upon you. Imagine that light slowly filling your body from the top of your head down to the tips of your toes. Open your cells and imagine breathing the light into every cell of your body. As you do this, the light dissolves all former agreements so that they are completely released at the cellular level. As you breathe in this light, it fills you and heals any wounds in your body, aura, or chakras. As the light expands into the seventh chakra, that's the crown, the top of the head, it strengthens your connection to your higher self. As it expands into the sixth chakra, the area of the third eye, it heals your inner vision. As it expands into the fifth chakra, the throat area, it heals your self-expression. As it expands into the fourth chakra, your heart, it heals your heart, opening you to more love. As it expands into the third chakra, solar plexus, it helps to empower you. As it expands into the second chakra, it enhances and expands your creativity. And as it expands into the first chakra, it assists you in feeling more secure and grounded. The light fills your body and permeates every cell with a dazzling, brilliant, healing light. And as your body becomes filled, the light expands and extends out one arm's length beyond your body in all directions. It heals any tears or holes in your auric field, and with the help of Archangel Michael, completely dissolves any roots, cords, or gossamer linings from the attachments. Please close your eyes and put your hands over your heart and repeat this. I now have 100% desire to realize my highest goals and to release all obstacles easily, joyfully, and completely. Anchor, lock, seal. I am light. I love and forgive God completely. I love and forgive myself completely. And so it is. And I would have you tap the insides of your wrists together one time to anchor that. And I just tested that this clearing and integration is complete. That is the spirit detachment. I would like to end this service with a prayer. Father God, Mother God, Christ, Creator and connection to all that is, thank you for all of our blessings. Bless all of us. Bless all we are connected to. Heal any forces, any spirits, any beings, physical or non, who are unaware of their true relationship with you, including us. Guide us to express your highest level of vibration and love and light. Thank you. It is so. Amen.